time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Hello, friends. It's a tradition unlike any other on a beautiful day. Michael Kelly walking through the beautiful tree-lined pathways in Forest Park. He does it every day, mile after mile.
Yeah.
Enjoying the scenery, the views, the smells of spring, as only he can at our very own special place, Forest Park.
So there I am yesterday.
There
I got
is.
My earphones in. Listening to golf.
He's listening to golf. Now, wait, let's stop it right there.
Yeah.
You're listening to golf.
Yeah. I was listening to golf.
What the heck is there to listen to in golf?
This is a guy who watches people play pool.
Yeah.
And snooker. Is traveling across the world to go watch a bunch of guys stand around a pool table.
A snooker
and
table.
Play pool.
They're playing snooker.
Okay. So, well, they're playing golf.
And you're listening to golf on the radio.
Yes.
That's incredible.
So I'm on my walk. I'm listening to golf on the radio. And and it was a gorgeous day yesterday.
It was.
Quite windy.
Yeah.
But I have been walking around, and I've been kind of bumping into this same individual who must be on my pathway of walking at about the same time.
An individual, you say?
Yes.
Male or female?
It would be a female.
Female,
I'm sure you could probably guess a couple of specifics.
Might this individual have had blonde hair?
Oh, ding, 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 ding.
Okay.
So there I am. And I was coming up to an intersection where I'm going to make a left, okay? This person, well, from a distance, is walking at me. I thought she was likely to keep going. She made a right, which would have been the same direction as me.
You're walking in the same direction.
So I'm, you know, we're making the eye contact, et cetera.
Eye contact is established.
But I'm keeping my same pace, so I'm a little faster than her.
You're faster than she is.
I think
we'd all agree with that.
I get about 10 to 15 feet in front of her.
You're okay.
And I do that kind of.
You're giving her the.
I kind of do that
view.
Peek over my shoulder to make sure that, you know, if
she's
I put
there.
Some distance, buddy, I go brain over butt, or a butt over brain. I wanted to use a different expression, I tumble around. I fall down.
Oh.
I gash my finger on the fence.
The finger is gashed on a fence.
I do a roll like I'm, going into, second base.
Wow.
I stand up.
Base.
My phone's gone everywhere.
Phone's
this
gone.
Girl's looking at me. Now,
the
for months, I've walked by her thinking, maybe I'll have a reason to talk to her.
Yeah.
Buddy, I start bleeding like a stuck pig.
Oh, blood everywhere.
Everybody around me is like, are you okay? You okay? I'm so embarrassed. I pull myself together, like, pretend like it didn't happen. You know what I mean? You come out of the role. You just back to your feet, like, walking very fast so that nobody noticed that you just fell down, hurt yourself, etc.
One of those things that calls the ambulance. You know, what do you call those things?
A life lock.
Yeah, right.
Or life alert.
Whatever.
Yeah. But it wasn't until about two blocks later, as I scampered away so that I didn't make eye contact with this person that I've been seeing, I do this thing. I'm looked down. I'm wet. I'm like, why am I wet? The whole side of my shirt's all bloody because I cut myself open.
Like something out of the Civil
War. And now this person that I've been walking.
There she was. Did she talk to you?
No. I mean, she wanted to. She wanted to be one of the people to help rescue
me. There you go. There.
But I was so embarrassed. I was just like rolling and going and running and getting out of there.
KMOX, your go-to for family-friendly discussions of topics that matter to you.
Hello there and happy Friday, St. Louis. It's the Hancock and Kelly Show.
It is a happy Friday.
It is a happy Friday. And for those that are regular listeners, you've heard my good pal here talk a lot about snooker. He's getting ready in a couple of weeks to go to the World Championships.
Yes.
Sheffield?
At the Crucible Theater.
At the Crucible Theater. And yesterday, golf is my sport. Yesterday, he texts me and says, are you watching the Ronnie O'Sullivan of golf? Which would be Tiger Woods, is how this man's speaking these days. And he just announced in the studio here to James O'Sullivan and I, our producer, boy, that That Augusta National is a pretty golf course.
It is. It's very pretty. Very pretty. You got it on the television up here because you're a big golf aficionado. Yeah.
Well, that's some insightful stuff if you're able to declare that Augusta National is pretty.
Yeah, it's nice. Now, I don't know if the color's been altered with the television broadcast, but you got the flowers out there. What do you call those things?
Those would be azaleas.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, John, regularly at this time, we do our political segment, so let's hop into it,
We'll
start with Washington, D.C. Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, who's rumored to potentially face a question of removal, finds himself on an airplane today going where?
He's going down to
Mar-a-Lago.
That's right.
He's going to see the former president of the United States. What should we read into this? Is this the Kevin McCarthy go kiss the ring before you get beheaded? Or is this an alliance that
trying to stem off Marjorie Taylor Greene, the congresswoman from Georgia, has threatened now for a couple of weeks to file a motion to vacate the speakership, which is what happened to Kevin McCarthy. I don't know that she's got any allies in that pursuit, but I think by standing next to Donald Trump, Mike Johnson's hoping that he might avoid that reality. He's got the Ukraine aid package that has still not come up for a vote in the floor.
Yeah.
And
so there are a couple other topics that he'll have to deal with down there. And one of them is the Ukraine aid package that you had mentioned. Has been through the Senate. It's being held up in the House. Most people think that it's President Trump who may be holding that up.
Well, Donald Trump has already said he's not going to give a penny to Ukraine if he becomes president. So that's pretty clear. I think it's a massive error in judgment. And we're sitting here today because of American inaction. Western European allies have put more money into Ukraine than we have to date. But it's the strength of the American dollar, and those dollars that are spent in support of Ukraine, the majority of them are spent here in America, buying military equipment for Ukraine and ammunition, which they are woefully now outgunned. So I saw a report yesterday that at this stage of the war, Russia has 10 times the amount of munitions than does Ukraine in the theater of battle. So that's a really bad situation. Ukraine has done a job of holding
3 years
their country together. It's going on three.
Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Vladimir Putin thought he'd take the place in 30 days.
He really did. And it's basically at a stalemate. But what you've got now is Russia is just wantonly bombing the second largest city in Ukraine, Kharkiv. They're just bombing, just sending missile strikes, drone strikes. They're taking out apartment buildings and schools. They're trying to level the place like they did in Mariupol at the start of the war in the southern part of Ukraine. And the United States, for what is a fairly small investment, allowed Ukraine to fight and decimate Russia's army, military over there, which has a national security benefit for us and our allies. It is a mistake not to fund and support Ukraine, a democracy defending itself against an external aggressor authoritarian regime. It should be a no-brainer.
That's likely to not be the only thing that Speaker Johnson and the former president discussed down at Mar-a-Lago. Speaker Johnson, who holds the narrowest majority as Speaker, would like to retain that job. And the way that he does that is by winning enough seats in the upcoming election. The problem is a lot of the rhetoric coming from the Trump campaign is problematic to that goal. And I'm talking about the former president's problem with early voting, vote by mail, et cetera. There's so many districts and even red states where Donald Trump is discouraging people from participating and voting that way. It's hurt them in previous elections. In fact, Donald Trump, since he's come on the scene, hasn't won an election other than the first one he was involved with. Is the speaker going to be successful in talking the president off this ledge, or will he meet the same fate everybody else has?
I don't know. Ballot integrity is on the agenda for this meeting between Donald Trump and Speaker Johnson. But it is inarguable that failing to utilize all of the access points to voting is a mistake for Republicans. And you look at a state like Florida, for example, where they've had early voting now for years. The Republican Party in Florida had a system in place. They were consistently winning elections. They were utilizing that early voting statute to maximum benefit. And if you cede the field of play in that area to Democrats, you're just putting yourself in a very bad spot. States that have mail-in ballots, which I'm not a fan of either, but if it's the law, you've got to figure out a way to get your the job of a political party is to turn out its voters. Period. The end. And if you're tying one hand behind your back in pursuit of that, you're it's no good.
Maybe the most undiscussed thing in this upcoming cycle is the fact that the DNC is focused on their get out the vote,
yes,
and early vote program, yes. And the RNC now has changed leadership, shifted its focus from early votes and voting absentee, etc., to almost just raising money for the legal campaign. They're going to meet a huge disproportionate advantage to the Democrats.
All of this election steal rhetoric that's been around has done real damage. So we used to have in Missouri, we passed an election reform bill a couple years ago to make it harder to cheat. So that was what we were told. And one of the things they eliminated in the Missouri law was sending out absentee ballot applications to voters, that political parties and campaigns could no longer do that.
We're in a Republican state where the majority of the votes go to Republicans. You would think a majority of the absentees would be Republican.
Let me tell you what we used to do for years in Missouri. We would go and find out who has voted absentee in the past, because that's a pretty good indicator. You get the list. It's a mailing list. You send them an absentee ballot application. It's got their name on it. All they got to do is sign it and send it into the election board. They get their absentee ballot in the mail, and then you chase to make sure they voted.
Jenny, did you get your ballot? Yeah, right. Great. Did you get a chance to vote?
A tremendous program, and if you're well organized, it makes a 1-2.5 point difference on election day. That political plan that we had done for decades is now illegal, thanks to Republicans in the General Assembly passing a law to, quote, clean up elections. And we're doing things and taking steps to our own peril because of this false idea that the 2020 election was stolen. It was not. And we're ceding ground to Democrats.
Wow. Inflation's back on the rise. That may be the one positive thing that the speaker can talk to the former president about. Is Joe Biden starting to see a rebound in his polling a little bit, particularly in some of the bellwether and the important states that we're going to have the decisions made in the Electoral College? Inflation's, though, an Achilles heel.
Yes, and the problem with inflation is, even though it has slowed or had been slowing for several months, the cumulative effect of the inflationary wave was part of what was driving Joe Biden's approval ratings down, because everybody feels there's a lot of things the government does that you can, you can miss it. Nobody missed the inflation. Everybody feels it. It's effectively a tax increase on every single human being. If inflation, as it did last month, begins creeping back up again on top of all of the sustained inflation that we've already taken on, the politics of that for Joe Biden could be devastating. And if that becomes the focal point of the election, I think Biden's in real serious trouble.
He's John Hancock. I'm Michael Kelly. Boy, we've got a full morning for you. We're going to take you all the way to 10 o'clock. Then we'll join Amy and Chris for their show for an hour. We're going to talk about the Wall Street Journal article that showed up on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, specifically about St. Louis.
It's we made the paper.
Devastating, and people from all over the country have seen it. We're also going to visit with the one person that I am most jealous of today, Dan Reardon, who is at Augusta National. He's the KMOX golf expert. He'll join us from Augusta National to talk the Masters. Hancock and Kelly after this on KMOX.
Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
So do you remember where you were when the OJ verdict came down?
Oh, I remember it very well, yes.
Where were you?
In a parking garage.
Yeah.
So we didn't have a television at the office back then. This was 1995,
four or five, yeah, somewhere in there.
So I knew the verdict was coming down, and so it was lunchtime ish. So I grabbed my little hoagie there and went out to my car to turn the car on in the parking garage, and they, not guilty, they said. Couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Couldn't believe it. I got out of my car. I was distraught. I couldn't believe he got away with it. And whatever car was parked next to me, I just kind of, you know, I popped it, you know, like that, kind of with my hand, just, you know, oh, shucks, you know.
Uh-huh.
And the alarm went off. And the car, it starts, yeah, and it says, I've been tampered with. I've been tampered with. And I'm thinking, OJ's
you're going to go to jail.
And OJ got off. So that's my very distinct memory of the OJ trial, yeah.
So I had just gotten out of high school, done a year or two in college. I was back in St. Louis going to university, UMSL.
Yeah.
And I was working on a golf course in St. Charles, Boogie Hills Country Club.
Oh, yes.
I was a bag boy out there.
So that's almost as nice as Augusta National out there.
Well, I don't know that I'd go that far. The Walters do a nice job, but I don't know that I'd put it in the same category as Augusta National. Having said that, it was crazy because I guess the word spread out that, oh, the verdict's coming down, the verdict's coming down.
Yeah.
And so we must have had 30, 40 people come off the golf course all huddled in that little room watching a black and white television.
Yeah, wow.
Of OJ, and it got me to thinking. I was like, man, remember all the names of the people? Lance Ito.
Oh, the judge.
You remember him?
Judge Ito, yes.
Dead or alive?
Judge Ito is very much alive.
He is.
Oh, okay.
He is.
Oh, we're going to play this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you remember A.C. Collings, his best friend who was driving the Ford Bronco?
Not really, but you're asking is
remember
is
he was
still
the one
with
who
us?
Was driving
he was the
Bronco.
Bronco driver.
Yeah.
Okay. All
and
right.
So AC and OJ were best friends. I think they went to university together. They both drove the exact same truck. So people thought that was OJ's truck.
But it wasn't.
It was AC.
It was
AC's truck.
OJ.
They had the same truck.
It's a whole lot of vowels.
And you remember, I watched Costas last night on CNN where he was explaining, you know, OJ was trying to reach him during that game, et cetera, et cetera. Because there was this New York Knicks basketball game going on against, I think, the Houston Rockets.
Wow.
That was on television. They had a split screen of OJ running from the law and the basketball game happening at the same time. And Bob Costas, who was working, hosting the game, said that they later found out that OJ was trying to call him to say, OJ, I didn't do Bob, I didn't do it, and you're on television. But with A.C. Collings.
And that was the year of the baseball strike in 1994, which is when OJ was in the A.C. Collins, whatever his name is, driven Bronco.
Yeah. A.C. dead or alive?
I'm going to say he's no longer with us, A.C.
He's, I believe, still alive, believe it or not.
All right.
Cato Kalin, remember him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's got to be alive.
He was the goofball that lived in the back of the house.
Right.
And I mean, he kind of reminds you of just, you know, like a stoner who...
Spigoli.
Yeah, Spigoli, right? Just kind of hanging out.
Yeah.
Not knowing where he was going. Mark Furman, that was the guy was
the police detective.
The police detective. He's still alive.
Oh, yeah.
But he's the one that...
found the glove.
Well, he found the glove, but if you remember, he had filed a complaint on his job saying that he couldn't do it because he was having a hard time being able to be impartial with people of color.
Oh.
And that's what spurred a lot of the, you know, the people were saying, hey, he's a racist.
Wow.
And he's the one who found the blood, et cetera. Do you remember either of the prosecutors' names?
Marsha Clark.
Yep.
And the African-American guy.
You're close. Keep going.
I'll know it. Well, first name.
Christopher
Clark.
Darden.
Yes.
Christopher Darden. And,
still both
and
of those.
Clark.
Those two are still very much alive.
Yeah, both of those folks are still alive.
OJ is no longer with us.
OJ is no longer with us, and I haven't seen anybody be upset about that. Although I did see the Heisman Trophy group put out a, rest in peace. And I'm like, why wouldn't they just ignore the day?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they just did they took his Heisman from him, didn't they? They should have.
I don't know.
They did, or he sold it. But why would they even acknowledge it?
Yeah, I don't know. What a singularly bad actor O.J. Simpson was, and he relished the notoriety of having gotten away with killing his ex-wife and a stranger. And it seemed like he relished.
Well,
it.
He says he didn't do it. He was out looking for the real killers.
Yeah,
for the real killers.
It's I don't know. It's a very sad. Well, you think about though the impact that's had on how we view trials. The entire country watched that trial on television, and in a window into our criminal justice system, which isn't perfect, clearly.
No.
Guilty people sometimes get convicted.
Well, especially if you have resources, right?
Yeah.
If you got money and you can hire lawyers to poke enough holes in the boat, you can create that reasonable doubt, correct?
But for that trial, we would never know who the Kardashians are.
Yeah, Robert Kardashian, who was the original attorney before I guess they brought in...
Shapiro,
dead or alive?
He's alive.
I don't think he is.
No, he's not.
Hold on, Shapiro.
What a showman he was in the.
What was his first name?
Robert Shapiro.
Robert Shapiro.
We're gonna find out. This is a good radio.
Well, you know Johnny Cochran, dead or alive?
He's alive.
Well, Robert Shapiro is still alive.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
He's 81 years old. Yeah. He's bald now. He doesn't have that head of hair.
Yeah.
But Johnny Cochran, he's dead, right?
No, I think he's alive.
Oh, Johnny Cochran's dead.
I don't think so.
Johnny Cochran's dead.
I think I'm batting about 750 over here. Though, he
died in 2005.
Oh,
remember him putting the cap on, stocking cap on, and the gloves.
Yes.
And but he was the one in the final things. He said, you know, he wore.
And
the
why they thought
down.
They would put? I mean, they put a latex glove on OJ.
Right.
And then said, now try this glove on over the latex. Well, I mean,
That was not only that. He also was no longer taking a medicine. Whatever medicine helps you get rid of water.
Yeah, right.
A Lasix type medicine, I guess.
Uh-huh.
He was in jail, so he wasn't taking that. So his hands were bigger than they were when the accusations.
Well,
that he,
there you go. Yeah. A sad chapter, but one that we all experienced together. And, that's over. I'll tell you the other sports news that was shocking to me yesterday. This guy, Ipe Mizuhara.
Who's he?
He's the interpreter of Shohei Ohtani.
Oh, he was the bookie for Ohtani? He was the interpreter. Who was apparently
his best friend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you believe the indictment.
The federal government?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He stole $16 million from Ohtani, and Ohtani had no idea. Now, I would love to be in a situation where somebody could steal $16 million from me, and I wouldn't notice it. But that's remarkable. He's going to jail, this guy.
Here's the bigger question, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so apparently this guy placed 19,000 wagers.
Hmm.
From December 2021 to January 2024, so essentially 3 years,
mm-hmm.
He placed 19,000 wagers. The average bet was $12,800.
Okay.
The largest wager was $160,000,
mm-hmm.
And the cheapest was $10.
Mm-hmm.
His total losing, the amount of money he lost, was $182.9 million. Total bets. Mm-hmm. Total losing bets, $182. Net losses of $40 million. Now, here's what I don't get. Who's taking bets for $160,000 from somebody if they don't know that they can back it up? And if you're placing 19,000 bets in 3 years, you're making bets daily.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're the person taking these bets, you've got to, you know who's behind the money.
Right.
And the fact that there's this narrative now that he had nothing to do with it, I have a hard time believing that in this society that you could make $180 million worth of bets and nobody'd be like,
well, they said Ipe was out there impersonating Shohei.
What, did you show up at the bank and pretend like he was him?
Well, I mean, you know, kind of look alike.
Come on. I don't buy it.
Well, but the feds have got a case here. They've indicted the guy, and, you know, the Dodgers are claiming that Shohei's been completely exonerated from any wrongdoing here.
Well, I would imagine the Dodgers would like
it. Yeah, right.
Otherwise, you took $3 quarters of a billion and just lit it on fire.
Yeah. Well, he's going to need that money down the road, apparently, because he's not getting the $16 million back.
Yeah, no.
So that money's gone.
No.
And Ipe, I mean, what a betrayal. These two were tight.
Yeah, and it's
they
apparently
would go
it said
vacation
when
together.
He came to America, when Shohei came to America, nobody on his team could speak English. So this interpreter was working with the banks, the lawyers, the agents, I mean, nobody ever put an infrastructure around him, if you believe the Fed's narrative that's in that, which I do. I believe the federal government.
Of course.
So if you believe that narrative, that nobody ever put a structure around a guy who's going to be worth $1 billion. I mean, I would imagine getting him from his house to the ballpark was an exercise because people were going to bother him. How in the world does the $180 million? It's too many people had to have been involved in this man's life to make sure that this kind of stuff wouldn't have happened.
I don't know, but it's not good.
Can you imagine calling up the bank right now and saying, I'd like to move $5,000? They'd be like, John, you haven't moved $5,000 ever. What are you doing? They'd ask you a million questions.
They
right?
Might, yeah.
This guy can move $160,000 on a daily basis?
I mean, all the time.
To this guy? I don't know. Something's not right.
Ah, well, that's Michael Kelly, and I'm John Hancock. When we come back, there was a front page story in the Wall Street Journal earlier this week that talked about our great city. And we're going to talk about that article when we come back after this on KMOX.
Now, back to Hancock and Kelly, sponsored by Insperity, HR that makes a difference, on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Not sure if you had the same experience, but earlier in the week, all of a sudden started getting text messages from my friends all around the country.
You got friends around the country.
I do.
That's because you're never here.
Hawaii, got a guy out in Colorado, uh-huh. California, uh-huh. All sent me a link to this article that was titled, The Real Estate Nightmare Unfolding in Downtown St. Louis. The office empty as district with boarded up towers, copper thieves, and failing retail, even Panera shut down. The city is desperately trying to reverse the doom loop.
The doom loop.
A real estate doom loop taking place in St. Louis. And it's, John, this is a really sad story. It goes through all of the abandoned buildings in downtown. It's been well documented. The homeless have been breaking into them. Yeah. Even one of our tallest buildings in downtown, the AT&T building, which
just sold for $3.5 million.
Think about this. In 2006, you know what it sold for?
How much?
$200 million.
Ooh, that was a good deal for somebody.
Right.
What are you going to do with it, though?
I don't know, but I mean, that's a problem.
You could have bought that for $3.5 million, Kelly.
What do you think? I got your money.
Uh-huh.
But we really are in a desperate loop, and I don't know, John. This is on top of you'll remember a month ago, the downtown group from downtown St. Louis that's a part of Great St. Louis was out there saying industry's coming back to downtown. We have vibrancy. There's activity. And at the time, you and I were like, what world are you looking at, right? Many people saying the same thing about crime. Well, you know, the mayor and the others have been telling us crime is going down. Things are getting better, and a lot of us have been scratching our heads. All of a sudden now, as it relates to crime, the Department of Justice comes out and says, one of three cities in the country where we're surging police into to help is going to be St. Louis because crime is out of control.
Right.
And we've got to find some way to. So we're getting gaslighted by our folks as it relates to policing and crime. And now even the Wall Street Journal comes out and says this about real estate. At the same time, our Chamber of Commerce is out going after the Wall Street Journal? Am I missing this? The Chamber of Commerce business is writing an op-ed in conjunction with the mayor of the city of St. Louis saying that the Wall Street Journal's wrong. They don't know what they're talking about. They're using old studies. Things aren't as bad as they used to be. Things are getting better. And here's my problem with that argument. I get wanting to be a team player. I get saying, hey, we got to clean this up. But we've been gaslit long enough in this town. I mean, the crime thing's been proven that we have a crime problem. We have a real estate, we have a downtown problem. And to continue to be told by everybody that things are going to keep going along or well is just crazy.
Well,
it seems to me the Chamber of Commerce could have used this as an opportunity to pivot and say, you know what? We've lost the focus on basic government services. We are having trouble finding police officers to keep the Central Business District safe. We've got to have a government that's starting to care about business rather than the Chamber of Commerce carrying the water of a city that's failing. It makes no sense to me.
Well, it's not good, and you don't need to walk very far to see there's nobody walking here. And the businesses are boarded up. This article in the Wall Street Journal focuses on the Railway Exchange Building. It was once the famous bar headquarters, a once very massive department store chain sold to the Macy's people, a decade and a half, two decades ago. Yeah, that building has been vacant for a long time. It was a thriving part of downtown around that building, and now it's crime infested. People are squatting in the buildings, and it's endemic of much of what's wrong here. And the spiral that the article lays out, it basically tells you that nobody's coming downtown, therefore businesses close downtown. When businesses close downtown, nobody comes downtown. And now you've got the crime aspect to it as well. There's a lot of people. And there's been a couple of night home Cardinal games. Look at the attendance for those evening games downtown.
It's not great. The lowest it's been ever.
Not great.
Yeah.
And there's an increasing sense that people don't want to take the risk of coming down here and parking a car and walking to it.
And that goes to my argument of, can we stop lying to each other? Can we stop pretending like this isn't a problem? Can we have the business community especially stand up and say, hey, listen, we've tried your experiments, Board of Aldermen. We've tried some of your ideas, Mayor. But at the end of the day, what's going to grow this region is commerce. And we are not going to grow it with less police and these antiquated, failed progressive thought policies, which have failed in San Francisco. They failed in so many places around the country. I mean, that's the unique thing about the experiments that we're seeing played out here in St. Louis. They've happened elsewhere.
Yeah.
We can see these same programs that have come up, whether it be universal income or whether it be purple shirts working with police officers. And a lot of these progressive thought processes all may be very fine and well and could make a difference if you're doing the basic government services. And that's where I'm at on this. Is I just don't understand why we continue to lie to each other. You have Steve Aylman out there in St. Charles. He sees we have a problem. He's got some ideas for solutions. I think he's wrong. You got the people on the Well, I don't think that the city of Charles ought to have any say over the way they do policing inside the city of St. Louis.
Well, he's just telling them they need to police their city.
I do get that. I get that. And we've got to, maybe it's time for us to have a regional summit where we can bring people together and talk about the fact that what we are doing collectively right now is not working. And let's quit gaslighting each other that it's getting better. And guess what, St. Charles? Truly, if you think this is a problem, St. Louis County, if you think this is a problem, Eastside, if you think this is a problem and you understand that we're all going to live and die together with this city, then let's come to the table and tackle some real hard issues. Let's quit telling each other things aren't that bad, putting our fingers in our ears.
Well, they are that
bad. Let's start saying, let's find a way to get together and fix this because you cannot be a suburb of nowhere.
Yep, and it's I don't see how you fix it at this point. You're not going to... You've got to, I guess, incent businesses to come here some kind of way. Well, this group's not going to do that, the City Hall group. They're not going to hand out incentives.
No, they think that's – in fact, they had somebody who wanted to put $100 million into a hotel. Right. They ran them out of town.
Yeah.
They have a building in downtown St. Louis that less than 10 years ago was worth $200 million. Somebody bought it for $3 million. Somebody wants to bring money to the city of St. Louis, and guess what you're saying to them? Good luck. Go on. We'd like you to go out to the county.
Well, there's news going on out there. We're going to catch up with that next. And then when we get back after the news, we're going to visit with our own golf expert, Dan Reardon, from Augusta National Golf Club in Augusta, Georgia. That's next on Camo X.
Hi, I'm Cardinals pitcher Lance Lynn. It's game day.
It's the Cards and Diamondbacks tonight. Ameren Total Access, 7:45. First pitch, 8:40.
Let's play ball.
On your voice of the Cardinals, Camo X.
Ah, yes. I love that sound. And if there was one place that I could be other than St. Louis right now, it'd be where the golf expert is right now. He's Dan Reardon. He's at Augusta National. Hello, Mr. Reardon. How are you, sir?
Good morning, gentlemen.
How magical is that place? And this is your 38th year down there, is that right?
I think that's correct. I know the first year I was here was when Jack Nicklaus won in 1986, and I lost two of them to the pandemic where there were no media allowed on site or very few media allowed on site.
Well, the course seems to be in great shape. They got through round one to this morning. It was quite windy. It looks like it's going to be a windy day. How do you see this tournament stacking up? First for Tiger Woods, right? The focus of nearly everybody who watches golf.
Well, Tiger just has gotten his second round started. He completed play this morning, and he bogeyed the 18th to finish the first round at one over par. And he's even, he parred the first hole, and he's playing on the second. The course conditions, in terms of Tiger, it's warm enough here. It'll be in the 70s at least, and that's good for him with his back. You know, the ankle we can pretty much dismiss now. That's fused in place. It's not going to be an issue. I mean, it affects the way he walks. It affects the way he swings, but it causes him no pain. But a good, firm, fast golf course will play to his strength, and his strength here is he knows the golf course. He knows how to play the golf course, and there have been minimal changes to this golf course this year. So Tiger is situated to play well. Now, whether at 48 years of age he can you know, stir up a little magic again, I have my doubts because he's played once this year and he even had to withdraw Riviera because of illness, not because of injury.
Do you think his game has become less attacking as he's aged? Is he kind of maybe playing it a little safer out there on the fairways?
Well, you know, if you speak about Tiger in majors, Tiger borrowed the philosophy from Jack Nicklaus: get the lead and make them catch you. And so you can go back through a lot of his victories, particularly in the majors, where when he got into the weekend, he did exactly that. He assumed that people would collapse under the pressure or try to catch him and make foolish choices. And so he would play the middle of the green in most cases, and then when there were favorable pins, he would attack those pins. And it worked. It worked for 15 major championships. But that 15th major was different than the first 14. I keep saying this over and over again. The comments that Tiger made after that win in 2019, when he said, when I got to the back nine, I knew where I could miss shots. And he missed quite a few shots. The only great shot he hit on the final nine holes in 2019 was he stiffed it on 16. Other than that, he played middle of the green. He got pars. He saved pars. And everybody that was chasing him fell down. The guy that came closest to him was Brooks Koepka. He had a chance to catch him with a birdie at 18. The rest of them had fallen by the wayside. So now I think that philosophy is extended through 72 holes of golf. I think he knows what his limitations are. And he does know that he has the mind to play well, even if he may not be physically able to play as well as he once did.
Well, Tiger's the biggest star in the world when it comes to golf. The second biggest star is Rory McIlroy. He's trying to complete that Grand Slam. He finished okay. He's in red numbers. He could be in a spot to make a run and make some history this weekend.
And his history of failure here has been poor opening rounds where he would shoot himself out of the tournament. You know, if you look at Rory's career here and you take three rounds, any combination of three, they're all winning combinations. It's that other round that gets him. So, you know, a 2-under round or a 1-under round on the first day or a 2-under, 1-under on the second day, make it cumulative and then put that talent in place on Sunday. We do know on Sunday that they are able to fine-tune this golf course enough that they will put the holes where players can attack and take advantage of it. And so if Rory can get to Sunday and then turn it over to his talent, he's as dangerous as any player in his field.
The number one player in golf these days is Scottie Scheffler, and he's playing like it.
Yeah, and you know, I wanted to look it up before we talked on the air, and it confirmed what, you know, the thing that's different about Scheffler, and I'll even include Tiger in this situation, in this stretch that Scheffler has played, it's the amazing number of shots that he hits extremely close to the hole. You know, all this conversation about his putting early in the year, his putting was not great. But his putting opportunities were great because his iron player is that good. I looked up his stats. He's number one in approaches to the green. He's number one in greens in regulation. He's number one from 50 to 125. He's number one from 150 to 175. He's number three inside 100. If you can play golf at that level, Michael Kelly, you can score on a golf course. I can score on a golf
exactly.
course. Exactly. And Scottie Scheffler is scoring on this golf course. And He doesn't lose that part of his game. He loses sometimes the ability to take advantage of that part of his game. And so he threw a number at Bryson DeChambeau yesterday, and we would expect he'll continue to do those kinds of things.
So we got just about a minute left. From a personal note, I'm excited to see Max Homa in the fight. But Bryson DeChambeau leads this tournament. Of course, he's from LIV Golf, which is one of the undertones. How's LIV doing in this, and are they continuing to get the cold shoulder from many of their co-competitors?
LIV is very well represented on the leaderboard. There was a little bit of a dust-up at the Champions Dinner when Tom Watson made a comment, was interpreted incorrectly. As far as Bryson is concerned, it's not that he's with LIV. It's he's 30 years old, and he's figured out that what's important is scoring, not impressing people with your distance. You know, I said on the morning report this, that he was known for his distance. Yesterday, he was known for his game. And if he continue to be known for his game, Bryson can do these. Remember, this is a guy that shot 61-58 on the LIV Tour back in the fall. This is a guy that won 5 championships before he went into the powerlifting and all those kinds of things. He's a dangerous player. I don't know, with a 54-hole tournament background, if he can necessarily produce those same results over 72 holes here.
Well, it's always fascinating to see how these 4 days unfold. We're on day 2 of the 4 now. Dan Reardon, our golf expert insider, he's at his 38th Masters tournament right now. Very kind of you to take some time and join us today. Enjoy yourself, my friend.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Parties at the Plaza. That's Westport Plaza going on all this weekend, and the Rawlings Experience is opening up. We're going to visit about that and tell you how you can get involved next on KMO X.
Conversations that hit close to home, from schools to your pocketbook. The voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
You are listening to the greatest radio station in America, KMOX. You're listening to the Hancock and Kelly Show. And we go now to the celebrity guest line, where we're joined by Cameron Schoffel. He's the director of sales and entertainment for LHM. Hello, Cameron. How are you, sir?
Wonderful this morning. Thank you guys for having me on.
Yeah, we're going to talk about one of the great places in our region, Westport Plaza. Boy, you guys got a lot going on there. Let's start with parties on the plaza. As somebody who grew up in the 90s, I grew up going to parties on the plaza.
Yeah.
They kind of evaporated as time went on.
Oh, yeah.
That's changing, isn't it?
It sure is. Yeah, we couldn't be more excited to bring parties on the plaza back to Westport Plaza and kind of reinvigorate some of those old feels and memories for some of those folks. And the footprint itself has changed so much, and people are really going to be blown away, I think, when they come out and see it. And it's been quite some time since Westport Plaza has been a true destination within, our region. But I couldn't be more excited for all the amazing things that are going to be happening.
Yeah, and so Parties on the Plaza kicks off on Thursday, April the 18th, which is next week at Westport Plaza. And you guys have got a new concert venue that's outside that you're going to have live music at during Parties on the Plaza?
That's correct. Yeah, we've made some renovations here on property, cleared out an amazing green space right in the center of all the action here at Westport Plaza, over 10,000 square feet. Guests can, expect live entertainment, bars, games, all sorts of amazing things. And there's going to be a lot of high energy. And like I said, we couldn't be more excited and anxious to get it all started.
Cameron Schoffel is our guest. He's the director of sales and entertainment for lodging and hospitality management here in St. Louis. The other big thing that I'm excited to go see. So the party's on the plaza. It's every third Thursday in the live venue space outdoors there. You got to be 21 or older to get into that. The other thing I'm fascinated by, Rawlings, of course, has moved their headquarters to the Gold Tower there at Westport Plaza. There's a big glove on top of it. And the Rawlings Experience opens in about 37 minutes from now. You'll be there, I'm sure, Cameron.
Yes,
what
sir.
Is the Rawlings Experience?
It really is an extraordinary setting. I mean, it's, they've done such an amazing job with that space. It's part museum, a lot of history tied to Rawlings. They been around for a long time and made a huge impact in the baseball and sporting good world. So guests can expect to see some really cool things like their gold glove vault. They've got some batting cages and some really cool things. And that's all complemented with a retail experience. Guests can go in and grab the latest and greatest Rawlings gear. As a fan of a big baseball fan myself, it's an amazing thing to have here in St. Louis and specifically out here at Westport Plaza.
I remember being a kid and going to the sporting goods store to pick out my ball glove, and they have a whole wall of them up there. And I at one point in time, I had a catcher's mitt, a first baseman's mitt, and a fielder's glove. And picking those out from that wall, trying the gloves on, pounding them, you know, I can only imagine what this is going to be like with the ball links. How many gloves are there to choose from there?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, hundreds, if not thousands. Yeah. And they've got amazing customization capabilities within that retail experience. And, I think I will be a shopper there myself for sure.
I'm about due for a new ball glove at my advanced age.
You also have an extension of your downtown property, which is 360, that's opened up in the Gold Tower out there. And it's even got an outdoor space.
Yeah, it sure does. It's a beautiful, beautiful venue. I mean, I really can't stress enough how amazing of a job everyone did with that. And I think it really complements, you know, Westport Plaza, but, you know, Maryland Heights and kind of West County as a whole. It's an amazing new venue, amazing food, cocktails, and a lot of fun things going on there. So, you know, if guests are so inclined to come to parties in the plaza and enjoy some of the events that we'll be doing throughout the year, and it's a great place for, you know, dinner, nightcap, date night, you know, lots of different options there.
Yeah, folks, if you haven't seen what they've done to Westport Plaza, it's great. You will be blown away. I hope I would encourage everybody to go to parties on the plaza. Go see the Rawlings experience as well. Cameron Shuffle, thanks so much. The Director of Sales and Entertainment for Lodging and Hospitality Management. Have yourself a great weekend, my friend.
My pleasure. Thank you guys so much. You do the same.
All right.
Have you ever played the piano at parties on the plaza or some type of drinking event like that?
I have not.
Yeah. I think you'd be entertaining.
Oh, people would come from inches around to hear a little piece of that.
If you go and try out some of these bats and swing them, will you make sure I'm there to be able to videotape? Because this would probably go viral.
Oh,
take some cuts.
It's a sweet swing. I mean, I don't like to talk, Michael, but you know, there's something magical happens when I pick up a bat and start swinging.
What magical thing happens?
Crime is thwarted.
Hey, buddy, I'll see you Sunday morning
at
8:30 on Fox 2 for Hancock and Kelly,
yes,
the television show.
Yes, 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 and I will see you this afternoon on the snooker table.
Next up is the Chris and Amy Show with Hancock and Kelly for an hour, so you're going to stay right there. We'll be back after this on KMOX.